make cares of my own. It is to thee and to thee only that I owe everything, O my deliverer, and my being indebted to thee for it gives me infinite joy. While in Paris I relaxed and did many things which I should not. I knew the extreme fondness which some had for me, and suffered them to express it without checking it as I ought. I fell into other faults, too, as having my neck a little too bare, though not near so much as others had. I plainly saw I was too remiss, and that was my torment. I sought all about for him who had secretly inflamed my heart, but alas, hardly anybody knew him. I cried, O thou best beloved of my soul, hast thou been near me, and these disasters had not befallen me? When I say that I spoke thus to him, it is but to explain myself. In reality, it all passed almost in silence, for I could not speak. My heart had a language which was carried on without the sound of words, understood of him, as he understands the language of the word, which speaks incessantly in the innermost recesses of the soul. O sacred language, experience only gives the comprehension of it. Let not any think it a barren language, and effect of the mere imagination. Far different. It is the silent expression of the word in the soul. As he never ceases to speak, so he never ceases to operate. If people once came to know the operations of the Lord in souls wholly resigned to his guiding, it would fill them with reverential admiration and awe. I saw that the purity of my state was like to be sullied by too great a commerce with the creatures, so I made haste to finish what detained me in Paris in order to return to the country. 'Tis true, O my Lord, I felt that thou hadst given me strength enough to avoid the occasions of evil, but when I had so far yielded as to get into them, I found I could not resist the vain complaisances and the number of other foibles which they ensnared me into. The pain which I felt after my faults was inexpressible. It was not an anguish that arose from any distinct idea or conception, from any particular motive or affection, but a kind of devouring fire which ceased not, till the fault was consumed and the soul purified. It was a banishment of my soul from the presence of its beloved. I could have no access to him, neither could I have any rest out of him. I knew not what to do. I was like the dove out of the ark, which, finding no rest for the sole of her foot, was constrained to return to the ark, but finding the window shut, could only fly about. In the meantime, through an infidelity which will ever render me culpable, I strove to find some satisfaction without, but could not. This served to convince me of my folly and of the vanity of those pleasures which are called innocent. When I was prevailed on to taste them, I felt a strong repulse which, joined with my remorse for the transgression, changed the diversion into torment. O my Father, said I, this is not thee, and nothing else beside thee can give solid pleasure. One day, as much through unfaithfulness as complaisance, I went to take a walk at some of the public parks, rather from excess of vanity to show myself than to take the pleasure of the place. O my Lord, how didst thou make me sensible of this fault? But far from punishing me and letting me partake of the amusement, thou didst it in holding me so close to thyself that I could give no attention to anything but my fault and my displeasure. After this, I was invited with some other ladies to an entertainment at St. Cloud. Through vanity and weak compliance, I yielded and went. The affair was magnificent. They, though wise in the eye of the world, could relish it. I was filled with bitterness. I could eat nothing. I could enjoy nothing. Oh, what tears! For beyond 3 months, my beloved withdrew his favoring presence, and I could see nothing but an angry God. I was on this occasion and in another journey which I took with my husband into Touraine, like those animals destined for slaughter. On certain days people adorn them with greens and flowers and bring in pomp into the city before they kill them. This weak beauty on the eve of decline shone forth with new brightness in order to become the sooner extinct. I was shortly after afflicted with the smallpox. One day as I walked to church, followed by a footman, I was met by a poor man. I went to give him alms. He thanked me, but refused them, and then spoke to me in a wonderful manner of God and of divine things. He displayed to me my whole heart, my love to God, my charity, my too great fondness for my beauty, and all my faults. He told me it was not enough to avoid hell, but that the Lord required of me the utmost purity and height of perfection. My heart ascended to his reproofs. I heard him with silence and respect. His words penetrated my very soul. When I arrived at the church, I fainted away. I have never seen the man since. Chapter 14. My husband, enjoying some intermission of his almost continual ailments, had a mind to go to Orleans, and then to Touraine. In this journey, my vanity made its last blaze. I received abundance of visits and applauses, but how clearly did I see the folly of men who are so taken with vain beauty. I disliked the disposition, yet not that which caused it, though I sometimes ardently desire to be delivered from it. The continual combat of nature and grace cost me no small affliction. Nature was pleased with public applause. Grace made me dread it. What augmented the temptation was that they esteemed in me virtue, joined with youth and beauty. They did not know that all virtue is only in God and his protection, and all the weakness in myself. I went in search of confessors to accuse myself of my failing and to bewail my backsliding. They were utterly insensible of my pain. They esteemed what God condemned. They treated as a virtue what to me appeared detestable in his sight. Far from measuring my faults by his graces, they only considered what I was in comparison of what I might have been. Hence, instead of blaming me, they only flattered my pride. They justified me in what incurred his rebuke, or only treated as a slight fault what in me was highly displeasing to him, from whom I had received such signal mercies. The heinousness of sins is not to be measured singly by their nature, but also by the state of the person who commits them. The least unfaithfulness in a spouse is more injurious to her husband than far greater ones in his domestics. I told them all the trouble I had been under for not having entirely covered my neck. It was covered much more than was covered by other women of my age. They assured me that I was very modestly dressed. As my husband liked my dress, there could be nothing amiss in it. My inward director taught me quite the contrary. I had not courage enough to follow him and to dress myself differently from others at my age. My vanity furnished me with pretenses seemingly just for following fashions. If pastors knew what hurt they do in humoring female vanity, they would be more severe against it. Had I found but one person honest enough to deal plainly with me, I should not have gone on. But my vanity, siding with the declared opinion of all others, induced me to think them right, and my own scruples mere fancy. We met with accidents in this journey, sufficient to have terrified anyone. Though corrupt nature prevailed so far as I have just mentioned, yet my resignation to God was so strong that I passed fearless, even where there was apparently no possibility of escape. At one time we got into a narrow pass and did not perceive, until we were too far advanced to draw back, that the road was undermined by the river Loire, which ran beneath, and the banks had fallen in, so that in some places the footmen were obliged to support one side of the carriage. All those around me were terrified to the highest degree, yet God kept me perfectly tranquil. I secretly rejoiced at the prospect of losing my life by a singular stroke of his providence. On my return, I went to see Mrs. Granger, to whom I related how it had been with me while abroad. She strengthened and encouraged me to pursue my first design. She advised me to cover my neck, which I have done ever since, notwithstanding the singularity of it. The Lord, who had so long deferred the chastisement merited by such a series of infidelities, now began to punish me for the abuse of his grace. Sometimes I wished to retire to a convent and thought it lawful. I found wherein I was weak, and that my faults were always of the same nature. I wish to hide myself in some cave or to be confined in a dreary prison rather than enjoy a liberty by which I suffered so much. Divine love gently drew me inward and vanity dragged me outward. My heart was rent asunder by the contest, as I neither gave myself wholly up to the one nor the other. I besought my God to deprive me of power to displease him and cried, Art thou not strong enough wholly to eradicate this unjust duplicity out of my heart? For my vanity broke forth when occasions offered. Yet I quickly returned to God. He, instead of repulsing or upbraiding me, often received me with open arms and gave me fresh testimonials of his love. They filled me with the most painful reflections on my offense. Though this wretched vanity was still so prevalent, yet my love to God was such that after my wanderings, I would rather have chosen his rod than his caresses. His interests were more dear to me than my own, and I wished he would have done himself justice upon me. My heart was full of grief and of love. I was stung to the quick for offending him, who showered his grace so profusely upon me. That those who know not God should offend him by sin is not to be wondered at, but that a heart which loved him more than itself and so fully experienced his love should be seduced by propensities which it detests is a cruel martyrdom. When I felt most strongly thy presence and thy love, O Lord, said I, how wonderfully thou bestowest thy favors on such a wretched creature who requites thee only with ingratitude. For if anyone reads this life with attention, he will see on God's part nothing but goodness, mercy, and love. On my part, nothing but weakness, sin, and infidelity. I have nothing to glory in but my infirmities and my unworthiness, since in that everlasting marriage union which thou hast made with me, I brought with me nothing but weakness, sin, and misery. How I rejoice to owe all to thee, and that thou favorest my heart with the sight of the treasures and boundless riches of thy grace and love. Thou hast dealt by me as if a magnificent king should marry a poor slave, forget her slavery, give her all the ornaments which may render her pleasing in his eyes, and freely pardon her all the faults and ill qualities which her ignorance and bad education have given her. This thou hast made my case. My poverty is become my riches, and in the extremity of my weakness I have found my strength. Oh, if any knew with what confusion the indulgent favors of God cover the soul after its faults. Such a soul would wish with all its power to satisfy the divine justice. I made verses and little songs to bewail myself. I exercised austerities, but they did not satisfy my heart. They were like those drops of water which only serve to make the fire hotter. When I take a view of God and myself, I am obliged to cry out, O admirable conduct of love toward an ungrateful wretch! O horrible ingratitude toward such unparalleled goodness! A great part of my life is only a mixture of such things as might be enough to sink me to the grave between grief and love. Chapter 15. On my arrival at home, I found my husband taken with the gout and his other complaints. My little daughter ill and like to die of the smallpox. My eldest son, too, took it, and it was of so malignant a type that it rendered him as disfigured as before he was beautiful. As soon as I perceived the smallpox was in the house, I had no doubt but I should take it. Mrs. Granger advised me to leave if I could. My father offered to take me home with my second son, whom I tenderly loved. My mother-in-law would not suffer it. She persuaded my husband it was useless and sent for a physician, who seconded her in it, saying, I should as readily take it at a distance as here if I were disposed to take it. I may say she proved at that time a second Jephtha, and that she sacrificed us both, though innocently. Had she known what followed, I doubt not, but she would have acted otherwise. All the town stirred in this affair. Everyone begged her to send me out of the house and cried out that it was cruel to expose me thus. They set upon me too, imagining I was unwilling to go. I had not told that she was so averse to it. I had at that time no other disposition than to sacrifice myself to divine providence. Though I might have removed, notwithstanding my mother-in-law's resistance, yet I would not without her consent, because it looked to me as if her resistance was an order of heaven. I continued in this spirit of sacrifice to God, waiting from moment to moment in an entire resignation for whatever he should be pleased to ordain. I cannot express what nature suffered. I was like one who sees both certain death and an easy remedy without being able to avoid the former or try the latter. I had no less apprehension for my younger son than for myself. My mother-in-law so excessively doted on the eldest that the rest of us were indifferent to her. Yet I am assured, if she had known the younger would have died of the smallpox, she would not have acted as she did. God makes use of creatures and their natural inclinations to accomplish his designs. When I see in the creatures a conduct which appears unreasonable and mortifying, I mount higher and look upon them as instruments both of the mercy and justice of God. His justice is full of mercy. I told my husband that my stomach was sick and that I was taking the smallpox. He said it was only imagination. I let Mrs. Granger know the situation I was in. As she had a tender heart, she was affected by the treatment I met with and encouraged me to offer myself up to the Lord. At length, nature, finding there was no resource, consented to the sacrifice which my spirit had already made. The disorder gained ground apace. I was seized with a great shivering and pain both in my head and stomach. They would not yet believe that I was sick. In a few hours it went so far that they thought my life was in danger. I was also taken with an inflammation on my lungs, and the remedies for the one disorder were contrary to the other. My mother-in-law's favorite physician was not in town, nor the resident surgeon. Another surgeon said that I must be bled, but my mother-in-law would not suffer it at that time. I was on the point of death for the want of proper assistance. My husband, not being able to see me, left me entirely to his mother. She would not allow any physician but her own to prescribe for me, and yet did not send for him, though he was within a day's journey. In this extremity, I opened not my mouth. I looked for life or death from the hand of God, without testifying the least uneasiness. The peace I enjoyed within, on account of that perfect resignation in which God kept me by his grace, was so great that it made me forget myself in the midst of oppressive disorders. The Lord's protection was indeed wonderful. How oft have I been reduced to extremity, yet he never failed to succor when things appeared most desperate. It pleased him so to order it that the skillful surgeon who had attended me before, passing by our house, inquired after me. They told him I was extremely ill. He alighted immediately and came in to see me. Never was a man more surprised when he saw the condition I was in. The smallpox, which could not come out, had fallen on my nose with such force that it was quite black. He thought there had been gangrene and that it was going to fall off. My eyes were like two coals, but I was not alarmed. At that time, I could have made a sacrifice of all things and was pleased that God should avenge himself on that face, which had betrayed me into so many infidelities. He also was so affrighted that he went into my mother-in-law's room and told her that it was most shameful to let me die in that manner for want of bleeding. She still opposed it violently, so that, in short, she told him flatly that she would not suffer it until the physician returned. He flew into such a rage at seeing me thus left without sending for the physician that he reproved my mother-in-law in the severest manner. But it was all in vain. He came up again presently and said, "If you choose, I will bleed you and save your life." I held out my arm to him, and though it was extremely swelled, he bled me in an instant. My mother-in-law was in a violent passion. The smallpox came out immediately. He ordered that they should have me bled again in the evening, but she would not suffer it. Fear of displeasing my mother-in-law and a total resignation of myself into the hands of God, I did not retain him. I am more particular to show how advantageous it is to resign to oneself to God without reserve. Though in appearance he leaves us for a time to prove and exercise our faith, yet he never fails us, when our need of him is the more pressing. One may say with the scripture, "It is God who bringeth down to the gates of death and raiseth up again." The blackness and swelling of my nose went away, and I believe, had they continued to bleed me, I had been pretty easy. For want of that, I grew worse again.